We're up on the web now, and this is a meeting of the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission. It's March 10th at approximately 2:30, and we're here in the state capitol. My name is Dusty Johnson. Joining me here are Commissioners Steve Colbeck and Gary Hansen. Our first item for business is an administrative item, and it's the approval of the minutes for those meetings on December 30th of 2008 and February 10th of 2009. Are there any corrections to the minutes? Hearing none, is there a motion?
Move for approval of the minutes.
Motion has been made. No second is required. We'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. The motion carries 3-0. With that, we'll proceed to consumer reports and an update from Ms. Gregg.
Thank you, Chairman Johnson. The Commission has received a total of 166 contacts since the last report was prepared for the February 24, 2009 Commission meeting. 83 of the contacts involved telecommunication service, 18 of the contacts involved electric service, 16 contacts involved natural gas service, 2 contacts involved gas and electric service, 6 contacts involved cell phone service, 32 contacts related to the Do Not Call registry, 1 contact was concerning the Keystone XL pipeline, and 8 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 487 of the 548 complaints received in 2009 have been resolved, and 2,506 of the 2,513 complaints received in 2008 have been resolved.
So, questions for Ms. Gregg. Commissioner Colbeck?
I just, that seems like 83 on telephone, that seems like a little bit of a spike. Is there one pattern that's been repeating itself?
Most of the people that have been calling on Lifeline Link Up and concerned that they haven't been getting their credits applied correctly, but we followed up. People haven't received the forms yet, and they're waiting for information, so.
Okay. There's no scams or anything that?
No scams.
Okay. It's mostly with Lifeline.
It's mostly Lifeline Link Up.
All
that's
right.
Correct.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. And then 7 outstanding complaints, if my math is right, from last year. Okay.
Those are the reduced rates. We're just waiting for Ms. Moore. They'll be on the next agenda.
Okay, great.
Yep.
Thanks. Any other questions? Hearing none, thank you to Ms. Gregg, and we'll proceed to consumer complaints. Item number one is CT07-006. And this deals with a complaint filed by Jackie and Cindy Brunson. Ms. Kramer, you indicated maybe we had some development on this front. Go ahead.
Yes, the parties would just ask that this matter be deferred at this time.
To a date certain, or?
This morning I would have told you for 2 weeks, and after having spoken to Ms. Brunson here just shortly, maybe a month.
Okay, so we just won't take any action on it this
Correct.
Time. So.
Correct.
Or perhaps we will, perhaps a motion to defer with no date specified to be in order. I'll make a motion. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Thanks, Ms. Kramer. Our second complaint may take a little bit longer, so we'll skip over that. We'll proceed to telecommunications item number one, TC07-117. This is a petition of Mid-Continent Communications for switched access rates. There are a couple different questions today. Perhaps we'll take the first one first. Shall the commission open a new docket regarding the filing of the cost study? We'll look to Mr. Thurber, Ms. Kramer.
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer from staff, and you may recall that staff in its brief recommended opening a new docket in this matter, with the filing of the cost study. We would ask that occur. Our belief is that the caption would more accurately reflect what is happening here, which is the filing for approval of a cost study, whereas the prior docket asked for an exemption from filing a cost study. It would ensure that everyone knows what the appropriate time frames are here for the suspension of the tariff, that the rate filing fee was appropriate. To me, it's just a cleaner, less cluttered filing for anyone who's looking for information in that docket a few years from now. And then certainly it would clearly permit intervention for those that will be paying the switched access rate. And for those reasons, staff would ask that this be opened under a new docket.
Okay, thank you. Comments from Mid-Continent?
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission,
I'm Dave Gertis. I'm a lawyer from Pierre, and I represent Mid-Continent Communications. Mid-Continent has no objection to opening a new docket. I would, however, like to add this. Excuse me. The commission is about to release switched access rules for CLECs. And quite frankly, Mid-Continent would like to have the option of looking at those rules and deciding maybe to set aside this current proceeding and proceeding under those rules instead. But we want to look at the rules first. And it seems to me and to my client that it would be perhaps a wasted effort for people to intervene in a new docket and for us to set up a new docket and all those kinds of things if, in fact, Mid-Continent ultimately decides to abandon the current docket and to go under the rules. And so what I would like to suggest to the commission is perhaps to enter an order to, or to decide to open this new docket that Ms. Kramer has mentioned, but to then say that the docket will not go into effect or something like that, that the docket shall not be opened until, for instance, 2 weeks after those rules are released. And then Mid-Continent could have some time to look at the new rules and decide whether or not they do wish to proceed with this docket. I just hate to see a bunch of people intervening and making a bunch of moves, which may be wasted effort. That's the only reason I bring this up. We don't have a problem opening the docket, but we just don't want people to go down the road a ways and then all of a sudden have Mid-Continent change its mind when it has seen those rules. That's my point.
Ms. Kramer, does staff have any opinions on the suggestion?
And Mr. Gertis did call and talk to me about this a little bit ago. And I don't have a problem in principle with it. My concern would be their tariff goes into effect March 27th, which is one of the questions on here. And I think you could still suspend that for the 120 days, but then the question would be 120 days from maybe what. And then if you do decide to take Mr. Gertis up on that, kind of putting it on hold, it's more of an internal policy for an intervention deadline of 15 days from the time it goes out on the fax filing. So maybe in the order we could make it clear that it's going to be, you know, 30 days for intervention or something like that, so that the interveners, those who are thinking of intervening, wouldn't have to get their paperwork together and get that filed until, say, the 28th day or whatever, so we wouldn't run into that issue. Those are the only two that came to mind right away about putting this on hold.
I mean, Mr. Gertis, would your client be willing to have that 120 days, that clock begin ticking at the time that this docket was opened, as opposed to when the tariff was filed?
That'd be fine.
And I think that would probably, you know, take care of that issue then. And then the only other thing would be, you know, just an intervention deadline. I think if we just made sure we set that way back to avoid the problem of, like he said, having a bunch of people intervene in a new docket.
Or either that or just delay
delay
the opening of the docket until a set period of time following release of the rules. That would seem to me, because I don't know how long it's going to take staff and the commission and whomever to go to get through everything and release them, but at least then it'd be a finite period of time from the time the rules go out.
Other commissioner questions?
I guess I'm not sure if I have a question as much as a comment, but if we did hold over. And this might be just floating a motion, but if we held it, hold over the opening of this docket until 2 weeks after the commission's rulemaking decision is written, would that alleviate? And then probably put the Well, then, would that alleviate your concerns?
Well, and I guess I'd ask Mr. Gertz, you're just talking about kind of the general release of, like, when we're seeking comments on those rules.
When you send them out.
Not the actual ending of the rulemaking docket.
Right. No, we don't want to wait until the comment period is over and everything else. But, I mean, if we see the preliminary rules and see where it's headed, I think we can make a decision.
Okay.
So maybe just defer this whole, well, I'm just trying to decide if you, with the tariff. I just don't want that having the ability to go into effect March 27th. So.
Well, we do have counsel, you know, stating that his client would be acceptable to the clock not starting until, you know, till the docket's open. I mean, I don't have any concerns with it, but we'll certainly pause to see if anybody else does.
Well, I mean, just for clarification, Dave, are you willing to agree then that we may treat the tariff filing as not having been made until that date 2 weeks after the rules release?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's what we need.
Yeah.
And we'll log it in as filed then on that date. How is that?
That I think would accomplish what we're looking for, yeah.
And staff would be fine with that.
Other comments or questions? Any action? I move that the commission open a new docket regarding the filing of the cost study effective 2 weeks after the public release of the CLEC rules docket, or the proposed rules under that docket. And additionally, that the commission assess a filing fee for actual expenses with an initial deposit of $1,000 at that time. And that pursuant to SDCL 49-31-12.4, that the commission would suspend the operation of the tariff for 120 days beyond 2 weeks beyond the release of those rules in the CLEC rules making docket. So let's, if anybody thinks I got any of that wrong, speak up. Okay, comments on the pending motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hanson?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
With that, we'll proceed to telecom item number 2, which deals with an application of Native American Telecom, LLC, for a local exchange service, COA. And the question for the commission today is, shall it grant the motion to dismiss made by Native American Telecom? At this time, we'll look toward Mr. Wazorek for his comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll make them short. Native American Telecom has filed a motion requesting that its application be allowed to withdraw its application without prejudice. There's not been an objection filed to that motion, so I just ask the commission enter an order allowing the withdrawal of the application without prejudice.
Do we have some interveners? Any comments?
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. Margo Northrup from the Ryder Rogers Law Firm here in Pierre. I am just appearing on behalf of the interveners in this matter. To the extent that Pine Ridge has indicated that that Native American Telecom has indicated they're not planning to go forward, we do not object to the dismissal of this docket at this time. We just don't want that to be seen as waiving any of the arguments that we made in the Crow Creek Native American Telecom docket. We still believe that they would need a certificate of authority from this commission if they decide to provide service, but at this time we're willing to agree to the dismissal. Thank you.
Mr. Cadle, Ms. LaBrie Baker, or Ms. Kramer?
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer from staff, and staff would recommend granting the motion to dismiss without prejudice.
Okay, questions from commissioners or advisors? Hearing none, any comments or action?
I'll motion TC08-109 that the commission grant the motion to dismiss without prejudice.
A motion has been made. No second is required. Any discussion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hanson?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Thanks very much. And Mr. Wazorek, the sound, once we fixed something on our end, the sound was much better. So I apologize for impugning your telecom system or provider on your end.
That's no problem. I'm used to being impugned.
The telecom item number three is in the matter of filing by AT&T Communications in the Midwest for approval of their switched access tariff and for an exemption for developing company-specific cost-based rates. And those are the questions before the commission today. At this time, we'll look toward AT&T.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bill Van Camp here on behalf of AT&T Communications of the Midwest. AT&T has filed a petition for exemption from developing company-specific switched access-based cost rates and for a waiver of ARSD 2010-2712. The current composite rate for switched access services for AT&T under its tariff is 0.043 cents per minute. I know in the original petition that I filed, there was a typographical error that it was 0.0431. I filed a letter on the public record to point out that typo. It came to the attention of AT&T not only that it offers switched access rates in South Dakota, but that since 1999 it has not made a filing pursuant to rule requesting that it be that it obtain a waiver from filing company-specific costs. The composite rate that AT&T has been charging in South Dakota has been the 0434 number, which is significantly below the Quest switch access rate. It has not changed since November of 1999. AT&T does not ask now that it be changed or increased. Clearly, as our petition states, since 2002, AT&T has collected in aggregate only $24,500 for switched access fees in the state of South Dakota. AT&T does not anticipate that increasing in any manner. It is merely a paperwork and staff error on our parts that kept us from filing as required pursuant to rule. There was a tariff modification filed in 2003 that was filed, but it never went through the formal process of acceptance. And waiver was not granted at that point. So at this point, AT&T would petition the commission to accept the rate and ask that we be waived from filing company-specific cost-based analysis due in part because of the small amount of business that we do in this state as it relates to switched access. We would also ask, of course, that the rate be approved retroactively, although I certainly understand the commission may be reluctant to do that. Nonetheless, I am compelled to ask.
Staff.
Thank you, Chairman Johnson. This is Terry LaBrie-Baker with staff. As Mr. Van Camp mentioned, AT&T...
Ms. Baker, is the mic on or close enough? Or?
Yeah, it's on. Can you hear me now?
Oh, better. Thanks.
AT&T's exemption from developing company-specific cost-based switched access rates has expired. They are requesting another exemption. Their switched access rate is less than that of the ILEC. AT&T has also requested a waiver from ARSD 2010-2712 if the exemption is granted. The waiver will allow AT&T to charge the switched access rate identified in the filing instead of the LECA Plus rate. Staff recommends the Commission grant the exemption, approve the waiver from ARSD 2010-2712, and approve the switched access tariff as filed with an effective date of today. There were no interveners in the matter.
Questions? Commissioners or advisors? Commissioner Kolbeck.
Are we going to go through the 2 years again, or are you asking for a waiver of not having to file this until you make a change?
It's my understanding under rule we would have to refile within 3 years from the exemption being granted here, unless we do not approach the Quest rate, at which point the waiver could – am I correct on that, Karen?
Generally, what we put in the orders anymore is so long as that the Quest rate, so long as it remains at the Quest rate or lower than that, then they do not need to come back in every 3 years, and we just put that in the order anymore.
Okay. But if we were to increase our rate, even though it were below the Quest rate, we would still have to come back.
We would want you to come back
That's
in.
That's what I thought.
That, yeah.
Okay.
Ms. Kramer, I'm trying to remember, I mean, has that been commission practice the 3 years, or is that in rule? Do we need another rule waiver to?
That is in the rule, but now, I can't remember which rule it's part of, if it's one of them you're already waiving.
Well, we needn't reference it by number. I guess when someone makes a motion, if we agree with that, we can just say, and waiving the rule requiring
right.
a filing every
right.
subsequent 3 years.
Okay.
Commissioner or Advisor, comments or questions? Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Perhaps Ms. Kramer can help me with this. What is the effect of either approving the rate retroactively or not approving the rate retroactively?
We generally do not allow retroactive rate making. And so what could happen here, from AT&T's perspective, is someone who has paid that switch to access rate could come before us or circuit court or someone and say, hey, you know what, you didn't have a filed, approved switch to access rate for that period of years where they failed to do that. And while that would be true, I think what a court or this commission would find is while that may be true, you did use the service and there is a cost for that. Is it the $24,500? I don't know if that's the cost, but I can't imagine anybody's going to litigate over that amount of money. But so staff would not agree to a retroactive rate making simply for that reason.
I assume it would be more complicated if they had been charging a different rate, a higher rate than what they're asking for approval now or something of that nature.
Right. I think then different issues would arise.
But in this particular situation, it just didn't occur to me that there would be any change one way or another, and I was curious to see whether or not it would create some challenges for us later on, and you don't see that, apparently.
I don't know.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner, if I could point out that you only would have two options. It would be go back, excuse me, it would be going back and try to redo the rate for all those years, or it would be, somehow forgiving payment. But in fact, since 1999, most of the providers have seen declines in permanent usage. So the idea that the rates would have been higher might be odd. On the other hand, in the past, I think, at times, staff, and I haven't seen a recommendation from staff, they would probably recommend jail time for their attorney. Just a thought.
I was going to make a comment about grabbing a cigarette at this moment, but I'll pass.
No, that's fine. I was going to make a motion.
Mr. Smith has found the rule 2010-2707. And I'm just verifying that he's right. No less than once every 3 years. Okay. Commissioner Hansen, you had a motion?
Yes, and I was just curious on, granting a waiver, we could just simply state granting a waiver from ARSD 2010-2712. Would that be sufficient in this?
Well, that allows them to charge something other than the LECA plus rate.
So we would also want to state that waiving the rule for a three-year filing. I just want to make sure it's sufficient.
Provided we stay below the quest rate. Am I correct? And no increase. Thank you, Bob.
Yeah.
I have parts now from three different areas. I'll grant you the opportunity to word the motion, that portion of the motion.
I'll defer that to Ms. Kramer.
Well, as I say, John, I couldn't tell if you were going to weigh in on something, or did you?
Not really. It occurred, Roland and I had a little conversation on the retroactive thing, and I guess it's our feeling that it's a filed rate regardless throughout that period. But I don't know that we need to address that now. If you're looking on the waiver language, the other rule that would need to be waived is 20:10:27:07. That's the three-year rule.
Thank you.
That's actually what I was going to bring up just now. Yeah.
Thank you. I will make motion then and allow counsel or my fellow commissioners to make any changes they wish on it, obviously. I will move that the commission approve the Intrastate Access Services Tariff and approve an exemption from developing company-specific cost-based switched access rates and grant a waiver from ARSD 2010-2712 and grant a waiver for ARSD 2010-2707.
Motion has been made. Is there any discussion on the motion? Commissioner Kolbeck.
The waiver for 2010-2707, the 3 years, that's only until any adjustment in rates, correct? So they might go 5 years and then have to come in because then they're going to adjust their rates.
Correct.
Okay.
Do you want to make – would you like to make that only if they adjust them upward? Upward. It doesn't matter to me. We have had some other companies where we've given them that leeway, and some of them have adjusted downward without coming in, but it's up to you guys.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I appreciate the suggestion. I'm trying to imagine any reason why we would want to go through a process if someone decides to lower their rates. I'm struggling with trying to figure out a reason why. Perhaps someone with more experience in that arena.
I would think only because I think doesn't it require that the commission approve switched access rates, and so I would think that one, we would have it filed with us then, and so we would know. So we just like to know those things, what their rate is for sure, whether it be higher or lower.
So a notification if the rate is adjusted lower and...
Or just if the rate is adjusted, yeah.
Well, we've had them before where they just make a filing, but we don't bring it here to the commission to go through the whole exemption.
I don't recall. I'm not sure I would agree with you there. I don't recall us, and we could have, but I thought we always approved all switched access regardless.
I can't remember now the name of the company. It was one, I remember Keith and I explicitly talking about it a few years ago, but it was one of, again, it was one with very de minimis revenues and...
Well, speaking of de minimis revenues, we should finish this up quickly or else AT&T's legal bill from Mr. Van Camp is going to exceed their annual revenue on this particular stream.
He was about to go have a cigarette.
Yeah,
so.
Too late.
My thought would be let's just, if it's adjusted at all, have them come in just as a safe harbor.
I have.
Which I think is what your motion meant.
I think that's what it says without having to say unless the rate is adjusted. Unless I'm looking at counsel to see whether they agree or disagree with that. Okay, so my motion stands as it was read.
Yeah, that's fine with me. Yep. Again, I don't care. If that's what you want to do, you want to have a case on it in the future, that's fine with me. We need stuff to do.
I'm picking up some bitterness, Mr. Smith. Perhaps we should just move on. It'll be okay. I think at 4 cents, they're unlikely to go much lower. But all right, motion has been made. We've had some discussion. Is there any further comment? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Kolbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. The motion carries 3-0. Telecom item number 4 does deal with an application for My Networks Group for a Inter-Exchange Telecommunication Services COA. Today, shall the Commission grant that certificate of authority? Is anyone from My Networks Group represented? Hearing none, we'll turn toward Mr. Binder, Ms. Semler for their comments.
Thank you, Chairman. iNetworks filed on February 3rd of 2009 for both a certificate of authority for InterExchange and for local exchange services in South Dakota. They do intend to offer these throughout the Quest territories, and staff does recommend the approval of the certificate authorities for iNetworks Group Incorporated, subject to the conditions that no prepaid services are offered and deposits are not required nor accepted, and then also that the certificates are subject to rural safeguards.
Thank you. Any questions or comments, commissioners or advisors? Hearing none, any action?
I'll motion on TC09-005 that the commission grant the certificate of authority to iNetworks Groups in accordance with any recommendations from staff.
Motion has been made, requiring no second. Any comments? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Kolbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. The motion carries 3-0. With that, we'll turn to our final agenda item, which is our complaint item number 2. This deals with a complaint filed by Roger Hall against Quest Corporation. Today, the commission is discussing Mr. Hall's motion to compel. Mr. Hall, at this time, we'll turn it over to you. We've obviously received your filing. Any oral comments you'd like to make in support of that?
Well, and I guess I don't know what the procedure is when it comes to a motion to compel. And thank you for letting me call in again. I was sitting here listening, and I was typing up another letter on something else. So, and I don't know, you know, what the procedure is. You know, in my motion to compel, I basically read through all the Quest responses, and primarily they responded with, for lack of their term, the statement of your business, except for information that was already provided, you know, either in written documents previous to this point. I don't know if we need to go through step by step on each item or how this works. I guess I'd ask for some guidance or some assistance there.
Well, and this is just Commissioner Johnson talking. My thought would be that, you know, if you're able to, your motion to compel was rather broad. If there are particular discovery requests, interrogatories that you want us to focus on, I mean, I think that would help us focus our time. Now, if you still have a general objection to all of Quest's answers, then we probably do need to go step by step individually, let you make your case, let Quest respond, let staff respond. Rather than go through all 24 or whatever, are there those? I mean, do you have a problem with all of them? I'll ask it that way.
Well, not all of them. Some of them were answered, obviously. A majority of them, I don't have a count here, I've just got them sequentially, I don't think were answered. How about that? And I see that in my haste, I do have some repetition questions farther on. So, I mean, out of the 24, I guess I got about 19 of them I'd like to address.
Okay, well, then let's pause for just a moment and check with the other parties, Mr. Thompson, Ms. Siebold for Quest, and then with staff. The process I've thrown out, you know, letting Mr. Hall make his argument, you know, on information request, you know, A or C, and then allowing you an opportunity to respond, and then the commission would rule, sort of working on them that way. Does that make sense? Does anybody object with that proposal? Object to?
Mr. Chairman, this is George Thompson from Quest. Yeah, I do believe there's a fundamental and a foundational question that needs to be reached before the commission would go through these questions sequentially and determine whether an answer was appropriate or not, or whatever their decision is on this. And that foundational issue is whether or not Mr. Hall's discovery was timely propounded under the procedural schedule that the commission's issued in this docket. Since November 10th, after a pre-hearing conference, which included representatives from Quest, Mr. Hall, and staff, the commission established a procedural schedule, and some of the dates and times in that schedule have changed since November 10th of last year. But one date that has not changed and has not ever been adjusted is the December 31st, 2008 date, which was the date for all discovery to be completed in this case. Quest argues that Mr. Hall's motion to compel is barred because he failed to follow the commission's order to complete discovery by December 31st. He propounded his questions on December 28th or 29th of last year. And so Quest would first ask the commission to dismiss motion to compel on that basis without reaching individual decisions on individual interrogatories.
Okay, and thanks for speaking up, Mr. Thompson. Let's hear from Mr. Hall. Mr. Hall, any response to that foundational concern raised?
Well, and I guess, you know, other than unsure of how the whole legal system works, you know, it was my understanding we had until the end of the year to file all discovery questions. You know, as far as a matter of completion, you know, I did file my questions. In turn, Quest filed no questions with me by the end of the year. So I guess, in my defense, I felt I met my obligation by filing my questions in the time frame established. As far as the completion of it, that would be a matter of definition, and I guess now that I've learned, it's my understanding that once those are filed, they have 30 days to respond, which they did.
Staff?
If I remember correctly, the intent was, in an effort to keep this docket moving, was to have discovery requests made and answered by the first of the year. That was the intent. Under that schedule, then, these are not weren't timely made, as there wasn't a time adequate to answer.
Okay, so the issue before the commission right now is, you know, we have a motion to dismiss, the motion to compel because of untimeliness. Any commission questions? Any commissioner advisor questions on that item? Commissioner Kolbeck.
When did Mr. Hall have his questions submitted to Quest? On the 23rd, you said?
The questions, I believe, were sent to Quest on December 29th.
On the 29th.
And
okay.
So it appears that it was a misunderstanding. I do believe, Mr. Hall, that he really did intend to comply. But we hoped to have discovery complete, answers sent by the first of the year, which clearly wasn't able to happen with the December 29th service date on Quest.
And this was Mr. Hall's responsibility to get him in. He was under the impression it was his responsibility to get him to us by the first of the year, instead of being asked and answered by the first of the year.
I do believe that was his misunderstanding, correct.
Okay.
Can I ask a question? Maybe it is. I mean, from Quest standpoint or staff, I mean, given that the hearing date is way out in May, I mean, can anybody really argue they've been prejudiced by this?
This is Kara from staff. We intended to have the hearing earlier, and that was why the procedural schedule was set up as such. Just with conflicts and with the motion to delay that occurred several meetings ago, all of that now has pushed the meeting back. So I agree. No one will be prejudiced, and we just did originally intend to have the hearing earlier, which was the reason for the schedule.
Quest, did you want to respond to Mr. Smith's question?
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I'm searching to recall what exactly Mr. Smith's question was, other than the prejudice. I mean, to complete the record here, Quest did respond to Mr. Hall's questions despite the expiration of the discovery date, and did that in part because Mr. Hall is a pro se litigant here, and did so out of an abundance of caution and in an effort to acknowledge the fact that Mr. Hall was unrepresented in this case.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Other questions, the commissioners or advisors? You know, one never wants to give, you know, reward people for not seeking counsel. Of course, one also wants to provide appropriate flexibility for those people who are not experts in the field. This would be a tougher call for me if we hadn't adjusted the procedural schedule for Quest on at least one instance in the past. Given the fact that the commission did do that for your client, Mr. Thompson, is there a reason that we wouldn't provide the same level of deference to Mr. Hall in this instance?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would just point out the difference between giving a continuance for the actual hearing because of conflicts with appearances in other states by counsel for Quest and adherence to the discovery schedule set out by the commission. As I mentioned earlier, this particular date has not changed since the pre-hearing conference and was agreed to by both Mr. Hall and Quest as the deadline. I find some partial problem with Mr. Hall's contention that he misunderstood this. I think the discovery or the procedural schedule order is pretty clear when it says in one sentence, all discovery must be completed, and the date in front of that is December 31st, 2008.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Yes, Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question of Ms. Semler, if I may. Did Mr. Hall contact you and ask you? I assume he had availability to chat with you when he wanted to. Did he contact you and tell you he was having any challenges here, or did you have any discussions with him?
I don't remember a conversation with Mr. Hall from the scheduling conference until some of our recent meetings.
Thank you. Mr. Hall, this is Commissioner Gary Hansen. Can you give us an idea if you were troubled with the process here and not receiving the information that you thought you should in a timely fashion, why you didn't make a contact with someone at the PUC?
Are you asking about the – I'm sorry, Commissioner, are you asking specifically about the discovery part?
That's correct.
Okay.
Why you were challenged in meeting the timeliness of the information here?
Well, you know, I guess when I go back to when they said completed, I guess I meant I was thinking that meant filed questions. As far as timeliness, you know, it did take me some time to pull my questions together. And as we all know, that November 10th to the end of the year is a busy time of year for everybody. But it was just a short time frame, and I thought I had to have the questions completed. And I did have them complete before that. I just waited to file until the end. I didn't have them. I hadn't done before Christmas, I should say.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, this is Commissioner Kovac. I was wondering, Kara, could you tell me, Ms. Simler, could you tell me what would happen for, or maybe Mr. Smith, what would happen if we did find that he did not comply with the order? Would the responses that Quest has actually issued, would they fall out of record?
I do not believe Quest has made that request. Mr. Thompson, is that Quest's intention? That wasn't what I understood. I think that what I understood was just you have voluntarily complied but don't feel it's appropriate to be compelled further.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Semler is absolutely correct. We don't intend to withdraw the answers we provided to Mr. Hall, but at this point we don't think it's appropriate to be subject to a motion to compel based on Mr. Hall's failure to comply with the procedural schedule. Okay. We're perfectly comfortable with the current answers remaining in the record, and should note here that a copy has been provided to staff on their request.
Okay. And if we did find that Mr. Hall didn't comply with the discovery order, what is there any other ramifications to him, or would it would just basically sit as it is today?
Correct. If you find that it would not be appropriate to compel further answers, he's got what he's got from Quest. Discovery is over. The remaining information would have to be obtained through testimony, live testimony at the hearing.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions, comments, or action? Mr. Smith.
I guess I just the comment I would have, and again, I don't mean to be beating up on anyone here, but it does hit me that we're now talking a hearing date. Originally, we were talking a hearing date in March. We're now talking a hearing date in May. The whole point of discovery is to allow a full exploration and an investigation of facts by the parties, to allow that to happen. It just seems to me that And in general, I mean, we've done this a lot in the past, where if we have a hearing date pushed back, it's not infrequent at all to allow even additional discovery to occur. To me, we've got 3 months before, 2 months before a hearing date. It doesn't bother me a bit if both parties have additional discovery opportunity, given that. And I think it's important for the commission, generally speaking, especially with a citizen, to err on the side of allowing the exploration of facts rather than denying that opportunity, would be my own feeling anyway.
This is Dusty Johnson here. I don't know that I disagree with you, Mr. Smith. One big difference is that often when an additional round of discovery is allowed, it's an omnilateral move. I mean, the parties have agreed to an additional round. They've asked for an amendment to the procedural schedule. This is a little bit different when you have at least one party and I mean, as well as staff, resisting the motion.
Probably. I just, again, to do things when I haven't at least heard from anyone here that they can point to any prejudice to limit someone when there's an admission that prejudice means there's no harm. It just seems to me to just arbitrarily do that makes no sense, especially when we now have an extended procedural schedule here.
I agree where you end up, and I think that the lack of prejudice is the strongest argument. I just wanted to draw at least one differentiating fact between your analogy. So, Ms. Semler?
Just to clarify the record, too, staff did not intend to oppose the motion. Rather, we were prepared to go through each individual item, and I will probably support Quest on most individual items, but I didn't intend to oppose this. I agree. I don't believe there would be prejudice to a great extent. So just to clarify the record.
Great. Thanks. An overstatement on my part, so thanks. Other comments, questions, or any action?
I guess other than the fact that I wish someone would give us a decent map to read so we can actually see what the hell is going on out there. I don't see that I would disagree with anything that Quest has given us, so I'm going to support the motion to dismiss, Quest's motion to dismiss, motion to compel.
Comments on the motion? And I'm kind of a by-the-book sort of guy, you know that, so part of me wants to agree with you. But like with a map, I mean, it's interesting. Even in your example, I found myself nodding my head. I do think, and I don't know. Again, on the merits of Mr. Hall's motion, I don't know that he'll bat 1,000 in the individuals, as we go sequentially through his order. But because there isn't any prejudice, I suspect I would be opposed to Quest's motion to dismiss, the motion to compel. Any other comments on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hanson, and the motion is on the floor. The motion to deny, or rather to accept the motion to dismiss. Okay. We'll proceed to vote. Hanson.
No.
Kolbeck.
Aye.
And I will vote no as well. Sorry for my hesitation. I got lost in my own train of thought.
I think it was the accept to dismiss.
Yeah, it's a simple mind. It has a hard time with it sometimes, my mind. The motion fails 1-2, so as a result, at this point, I believe, since we've dealt with the foundational question, we're now left with moving sequentially through Mr. Hall's requests. Before we do that, we'll just see if there are any other preliminary issues to be raised. Hearing none, then let's proceed. Hold on just a second. The fact that the Commissioner Kolbeck's motion went down 1-2 didn't mean that the commission took any action one way or the other on the pending motion. I wonder if I'll make a motion to deny Quest's motion to dismiss so that we have an affirmative ruling by this commission. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hanson?
Yes.
Kolbeck?
No.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 2-1. Quest motion having been dispensed with, will now proceed through Mr. Hall. Mr. Hall, we'll hand it off to you. Although maybe I'll sort of drive the train a little bit here to keep us focused.
Yes, sir.
I'm looking at Roger Hall 1 information request. Do you have concerns with this?
The reason I put this in there is because earlier in this testimony, they stated that other mobile home parks in South Dakota have followed the same rule. And I guess my point to the question was, which ones? And at this point, they've denied that any of them exist, or it would have taken an exorbitant amount of time to do that. Just going back to earlier testimony that they provided.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Thompson?
Mr. Chairman, what we've said is not that we've referenced other mobile home parks. We've said that Quest tariff applies to mobile home parks in South Dakota. There's quite a distinction there. And I guess I could sum up what Mr. Hall is requesting in this first request by saying he's asking for Quest to go to the commission and do research and provide him answers. You know, I would respectfully submit that if Mr. Hall wants to do research, the records of the commission are equally available to Mr. Hall as they are to Quest. And that's why we've objected to this particular discovery request. I'd also note that it should be fairly clear that Quest would not have information in the ordinary course of business about every mobile home park in South Dakota.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Thompson. Staff, Ms. Emler?
Staff supports Quest's objection and recommends the commission deny this request by Mr. Hall.
Any questions? Hearing none, I will move that the commission deny the motion to compel on Roger Hall 1. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none,
I was just going to say, in Mr. Hall's arguments, he says that the PUC was dealt with it. If that is fact, then it should be an open record, correct? And all of that information should be available to you on the Internet through the South Dakota PUC website.
This is Mr. Hall. I find it difficult to do that research, and I'm just going back to a statement made by Quest, and at that time they were not addressing the tariff. They were addressing the other mobile home parks in South Dakota have been constructed under these same rules. That was the statement made.
Well, and I'm out of my element a little bit here, so I'll ask, somebody to correct me if I'm wrong, but, normally discovery is only able to attain information that exists within an organization, and if Quest doesn't have a list of those mobile home parks, discovery would not be the mechanism used to compel them to do that research. There is a pending motion. The motion is to deny on Roger Hall 1 the motion to compel. Hearing no further discussion, we'll proceed to vote. Hanson?
Yes.
Colbeck?
Yes.
Johnson votes yes. Motion carries 3-0. Mr. Hall, at this time, we'll look toward Roger Hall 2 to see if you have a problem with the response from Quest.
Number 2, no, they did respond to that one with the location of the MPOP. The information is incomplete, but for this purpose, it suits it.
Hold on just a second. Okay, so just so I can clarify your opinions here, you do not think that Quest answered completely, but you're not going to force a motion to compel on this item.
Right.
Okay. With that, we'll move to Hall 3. And thanks for that, Mr. Hall. I mean, when you don't have a problem, let us skip over it just like you did there. Hall 3, Mr. Hall.
No, I'm going to try to be brief here. Brevity is one of my stalwarts here. So number 3 addresses to the mobile home park being defined as a campus environment. Basically, Quest rejected this response because they did not use it in their motion to dismiss. And because of that, they dismissed it. However, in the tariff, to go back to that, they do not define mobile home parks as a campus environment. And that was the point of the question, was to see where mobile home parks are defined, because there is some disparity between the paragraphs in 4.7.
Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, it's interesting that Mr. Hall is attempting to modify the request that he made in question number 3 here. But if you read the question he propounded to Quest, he refers to our motion to dismiss and then asks us to identify every factual reason why we believe his mobile home park is a campus environment or campus arrangement. And I think our answer is absolutely direct and to the point. We didn't use those words in our motion to dismiss. That was what his question referred to. So I fail to see how this answer does anything other than provide him a full and complete answer to the question he posed. Now, if he wants to modify that, that's another story. And it's another set of discovery. It's a modified question, and it should not be dealt with here in the context of this motion to compel.
Thank you, Ms. Semler.
staff supports Quest's objection. Mr. Hall seems to have wanted to modify the question, which isn't appropriate at this time.
Thank you. Any questions by commissioners or advisors? Hearing none, is there a motion?
Move to deny Hall request 3.
Motion is, has been made. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote on the motion to deny the motion to compel. Hansen?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries. 3-0. Mr. Hall, number 4.
Well, in the interest of time, number 4 has basically been addressed by 1 and 3 at this point. So.
Okay, thanks. Number 5.
And let me catch up with my reading. Once again, we're back to, and if Mr. Thompson insists upon using the same argument about the motion to dismiss instead of what was stated earlier, in fact, you know, they stated that the first building on the property is where the MPOP is located, or the, I can't remember the other term, but I was asking where they consider the first building on a mobile home park, so.
And what about Quest? Was there something specific about Quest's answer that you felt was incomplete or inappropriate?
Well, they used the same argument as they did back in the previous response, number 2, where they said the term was not used in their motion to dismiss.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Thompson?
Mr. Chairman, I would say that this question asked us to explain a term used in the motion to dismiss that Quest never used. Despite that, and Quest directed Mr. Hall back to the map we provided in response to request number 2, and I think that's a full and complete answer to this.
Okay, Ms. Semler?
Staff supports Quest's objection. Although the terminology was not used in Quest's motion to dismiss, it still went ahead and did attempt to answer the question. Recommend denial.
Questions? Hearing none, any motion?
A motion to deny Mr. Hall's motion number 5 to dismiss.
Motion has been made. Any discussion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Mr. Hall, number 6.
Yeah, number 6 has been answered through a letter from Sue Cotton at Quest.
Okay. With that, we'll proceed to number 7. I'm sorry, I cut you off there, Mr. Hall. Did you have anything
else
to say?
I'm sorry, I was clearing my throat. I apologize.
Okay. Go ahead.
Number 7 addresses many times they've spoken about capacity at the southeast corner of town, the main switch. I've requested that they identify their capacity, and this goes back to the prudent planning question on the South Dakota law that we stated here a couple weeks ago. And they object to the grounds of the phrase of pairs of phone lines available, even though that's the term that they have quite frequently used.
Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, of course we objected to this, but then at the last sentence of the response, we provided a substantive answer with an as-of date of January 2009. So Quest admits that we've fully answered question number 7.
Ms. Semler?
I believe the question's been answered. Deny, further compel.
Questions? Mr. Hall, what, you know, at the end there, Quest does say there are two pairs left.
Yes.
What about that answer is incomplete?
Well, and the question was aimed at some more, you know, as far as capacity. There are two pairs left, and they did answer the specific question. So.
Okay, so are you not pushing the motion to compel?
Not on that one, no.
Okay, great. We'll go to Hall 8.
Hall number 8 talks about the exact location where phone lines owned by Quest run across the mobile home park in question. They see attachment A. We're back to the original map again, and this will – it addresses the phone lines that run – on two sides of the property, but fails to identify the phone lines that run along the what's called the Hall property line on what would be the north side of the property there. which there is a line running up there. So.
Okay, Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm turning back in my deck to look at the map that was provided. I think it's got a copy of all the existing Quest facilities that I'm aware of. And not only that, Quest also responded with a letter from Northwestern Bell to Orville Hall, which was dated, I believe, I don't know that there's a date on this, other than a handwritten date at the bottom of 12/30/1980. But I think we provided the map, and we've also provided a copy of any easement or contract existing in our system of records that would refer to Mr. Hall's property. I think this question's been fully answered.
Ms. Semler?
I agree the question's been answered.
Questions? Commissioner Colbeck?
Mr. Hall, were you looking for drops buried to each trailer? Is that what you're looking for? Because I don't see that on the...
You're correct, Commissioner Colbeck. There are not drops located on the trailers. As you can see on the drawing, there's existing trailers along that line. And along that Hall property line, the line comes up burial to that point and then drops into the pedestals along that backside of the property line. And there's also two houses up there which are also served by Quest, which also runs up that property line to serve those facilities.
Okay, thank you.
So I just want to make sure, this is Dusty Johnson, I just want to make sure I'm following. So your contention, Mr. Hall, is that that information is not on the map provided in Attachment A, but that it should be?
Yeah, that is correct.
Excuse me.
Mr. Hall, go ahead.
Sorry, Mr. Smith. So, you know, Mr. Hall, your question asked specifically for them to identify phone lines that run across the mobile home park in question. I think I heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the lines you're talking about run near but not across that property. Am I wrong about that?
Yes, sir. They do run on the property, particularly the one along the I got to get my bearings here, along the west side, the north side, and the east side.
So they do, you contend they are on the property?
Yes, sir.
And are not on the map?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Thompson?
Mr. Chairman, if you look at the map in question in the top right-hand corner, you'll see a notation that says Quest aerial line attached to power poles, period. I'd submit that the facilities are noted on Mr. Hall's property as transversing the western and the northern sides, as he's been referring to. There's also a reference on the southern side to existing buried telco cable down at the bottom center of the drawing. So I do believe that individual lines that have been strung from the MPOP to homes existing within the property owned by Mr. Hall were not addressed by his question, nor do I believe frankly, that there are any drawings that would contain the local drops.
Okay.
Commissioner, may I speak?
Absolutely. Let's look to Ms. Semler. We've been going back and forth. We'll see if she's got a response to any of the comments made.
I just simply don't think the information Mr. Hall's looking for is contained in his question.
Thanks. Mr. Hall?
Yes, I still think that they are missing information on the drawing, because they show where the MPOP is, which serves five trailers, and they fail to show how the remaining facilities are served.
Okay, Commissioner Colbeck.
Mr. Thompson, does Quest own the drops, or does the customer own the drops?
That's a good question, Mr. Commissioner, and I'm not sure I can answer without talking to our engineering folks.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions?
I would, I was just going to mention, keep in mind that Mr. Thompson mentioned that Quest may not have drawings of those drops, and Quest can only provide what it has. So also keep that in mind.
I guess that leads me to another question then. Mr. Thompson, is this an as-built drawing that we're looking at? Is this all that you have?
Mr. Commissioner, I believe this is the only drawing. Whether or not it's an as-built is a question I would have to go back to the engineers and discuss with them. But I believe that let me back up. On the right side of the page that's listed, attachment A to question number two, that drawing, that map, I believe, is the total of Quest records regarding this. Now, as you can see over on the left side of the document, Mr. Tromp, who is the local engineer that covers Hill City, has made a number of comments and tried to address Mr. Hall's individual interrogatories by number on the left side, so that this map isn't going to be exactly the same as perhaps earlier maps that were provided to Mr. Hall or to staff, because these comments were inserted by Mr. Trump. But outside of those comments, I think these are the records that we have that address Mr. Hall's property.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Any comments or action?
Yeah. I'll motion to deny request number 8, Mr. Hall. I think that this is probably all the information that Quest has on it, plus if there were drops that Mr. Hall was maybe after, I don't see how they would affect the situation.
Motion has been made. Any discussion? Hearing none. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Commissioner.
Just a question. Commissioner Kolbeck, did you say item 9 or item 8?
I meant to say item 8.
All right. Thank you. I had heard 9. I don't know. You may have said 8. I just didn't hear it. Yeah. Thank you.
Any other comments on the motion? Then we'll proceed to vote. Hanson?
Yes.
Kolbeck?
Aye.
Johnson will tie. Motion carries 3-0. Mr. Hall, item number 9.
All right, number 9 is a fairly short one. Thank you, Commissioner. This goes back to the original statement of facilities must be upgraded back into town. I just wanted to make sure that we understood where we were all talking about. And they said they can't be on the scope of the proceeding, and I don't. I think it's very valid as to where this property is located and how far back into town it is.
Mr. Thompson?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hall's question presumes that Quest has made a factual contention in this case that the mobile home park is or is not within the city limits. I don't think that's the case here. I don't think Quest has expressed any opinion about whether or not the mobile home park is within or without the city limits of Hill City. And furthermore, I think the question of whether or not the mobile home park is within the city limits is irrelevant. For the life of me, I can't see a reason why that would have some impact on this litigation.
Ms. Semler?
Staff argues that the question is irrelevant. Certainly the location, proximity to Quest facilities may be at issue, and that's something we're certainly going to explore in the hearing. But location to town I see as irrelevant.
Questions? And I might just, add, Mr. Hall, with something like this, this information exists. I mean, it either is in town or it isn't, and, that may have merit to the case you want to put on. But I think the best information for that is the government entity that's got those kind of records. What Quest thinks about it, I mean, it either is or it isn't. I mean, if Quest believes that it's in town and it isn't, it doesn't matter a whole lot. And if I'm getting that wrong, somebody correct me. But okay, questions? Hearing none, I would move to deny the Hall motion on 9. Any discussion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hanson?
Yes.
Kolbeck?
Yes.
And Johnson votes yes. Motion carries 3-0. We'll proceed to Hall 10.
Okay, I'll just combine 10 and 11 together.
That's fine. Go ahead.
They're basically the same. They go back to the addressing of the planning and outlay for, you know, future development and growth in Hill City. Just please identify what they've done to provide adequate phone lines for prospective phone customers and facilities in that corner of town. Thank you.
Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, that's really not what Mr. Hall is asking here. He's asking what we're doing to provide adequate and reliable phone facilities to prospective phone customers. So, in other words, what he's asking is for us to speculate about what we might do in the future. I don't think that's an appropriate question, and frankly, these two questions appear to be more in the line of argument that should be made at hearing as opposed to legitimate discovery questions, which would produce some information found in a system of records at Quest, which might be useful to Mr. Hall to pursue his case or at least establish some facts in this case.
Okay. Ms. Simler?
Staff supports Quest's objection. I do find it hard to understand what documents could be produced. I agree this is more along the lines of argument that the commission will have a chance to struggle with at the hearing.
Comments or questions? You know, I mean, I understand. I mean, there are a couple of things flawed with these questions. I mean, I do struggle. I mean, looking at it from Mr. Hall's position, I mean, if he wants to, and this is me, you know, supposing here, but if he wants to put on an argument that Quest has not acted, you know, with due diligence to adequately, you know, plan for the future, how's he going to get that information? I mean, you know, that information, you know, presumably would be held by Quest. I understand why the question is flawed legally. I do sympathize. I mean, he's not going to have much to put on a case without information like this. I don't know. Other comments, questions?
I kind of agree that it's all speculation, and the information that could be provided is it's probably going to be irrelevant to the charges at hand. So I'll motion to deny Mr. Hall's motion number 10 and 11.
Motion has been made on those items. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hanson?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Item number 12.
Item number 12, thank you. Please identify you consider to be the subscriber or the customer. Many times during previous testimony, we've talked about the customer or the subscriber, in this case, being the person that pays the bill. And I'm trying to make sure that we're clear that I am not the one that pays the bill. This is the tenants in the court. So.
Mr. Thompson?
Well, Mr. Chairman, this question is at the heart of this particular docket. The Quest has contended throughout that Mr. Hall is a customer for the purpose of installing new facilities under Quest tariffs. Now, this question doesn't really identify who he might be talking about. I mean, we certainly would consider individual tenants inside of the mobile home park who subscribe to Quest services subscribers. But, for that matter, Mr. Hall's failure to identify the situation that he's talking about here makes this question vague and ambiguous. I mean, we would certainly identify individual tenants who have ordered Quest service and that service has been installed to be Quest customers. I don't know if Mr. Hall himself is a Quest customer. We would have to research the records to do that. But we certainly consider Mr. Hall a customer for the purposes of the construction that needs to be accomplished in order for the new trailers installed on the mobile home park to receive service. So from that sense, I think we can supplement this answer by saying we consider Mr. Hall to be a customer for the purposes of Section 4.7 of the tariff, the catalog, and we consider individual subscribers who subscribe to Quest service, whether it be basic residential service or some bundle or package of services. We would also consider those folks to be subscribers and customers.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Semler?
I agree with Quest that context is very important in the question, and context wasn't provided in the question. However, it appears as if that was just provided and answered by Quest.
So, I mean, is information from Quest given in this sort of, in this proceeding before us right now, is that able, is that admissible at hearing? Is that able to be referenced to? I mean, Mr. Smith, I'd kind of like to have Quest respond in writing, supplement their answer, unless you're telling me what they've, what Mr. Thompson said is just as admissible.
I think, I personally think the additional information ought to be done as a discovery response myself.
Okay.
That makes it clear. And I guess from my standpoint, and it may require some elaboration, Mr. Thompson, but to me this seemed like a reasonable question.
Any other commissioner questions?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, it's intriguing that Quest was able to give an answer at this juncture and did not appear to be interested in giving one earlier. I would very much like to have it aired out in writing, and I think that may, in fact, give us even more information than what was just given to us orally. So I would I will move that the commission approve the information request on Hall 12.
Motion has been made. Any discussion? I agree. We'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Mr. Hall, number 13.
Well, 13 is related to 12, so we'll just skip over that one.
Okay. 14?
How about that?
Mr. Chairman, this is George Thompson.
Yes.
I think we need to discuss 13. It's not just related to number 12. There's a serious CPNI question involved here that I believe the commission's got to address before we just blithely pass over 13.
Well, I don't know that I disagree with you, Mr. Thompson, that there's sensitive information here, but given that Mr. Hall is not pushing a motion to compel on this item, what is there to discuss?
Well, I'm not sure that Mr. Hall, whether Mr. Hall believes that the supplement to question number 12 that we're going to provide somehow addresses 13, or if he's just simply acknowledging to the commission that he has no motion to make on number 13.
Oh, I
see.
That's
unclear.
No, I think you're right. Mr. Hall, my presumption was that you were withdrawing your motion to compel on 13. Am I mistaken?
No, you're correct.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Mr.
Thanks for asking the question, George. You're right. Mr. Hall, number 14.
I'm taking notes here. Hold on just a second, please. number 14, look at my notes. Well, in light of the previous answer, I guess we'll have to withdraw number 14 since they've already deemed the map as suitable. I'll withdraw number 14.
Okay, thanks. 14 is withdrawn. Hold on just a second. Again, we're just pausing for a moment. All right. At this time, Mr. Hall, you said you withdrew 14, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We'll proceed to number 15.
And likely with 15 and number 16 also. We've answered that in previous questions.
Okay. 15 and 16 are withdrawn. 17.
Number 17, this directly relates back to the cost incurred. Please identify how many linear feet of phone lines have to be installed in order to provide phone service. They provided the information in part with Ms. Cotton's answer. However, it kind of left it open-ended, and it probably falls back on me to calculate the linear foot. That's what Mr. Thompson would say. So having said that, I'll leave it to him.
Mr. Thompson?
Mr. Chairman, we agree with Mr. Hall. The placement of the network interface device and the pole or whatever piece of structure Mr. Hall would choose to put that network interface device on is going to drive the length of the individual drops to trailers. Sort of a question of chicken and egg here, which depends on mostly on Mr. Hall's choice of the erection of a pole or the establishment of another point somewhere where Quest could install a network interface device. So Mr. Hall has better information on where this might go and subsequently what the length of the drops would be.
Ms. Semler.
Staff supports Quest's objection and reasoning.
Questions or comments by commissioners or advisors? Commissioner Kolbeck.
Well, I just think that Mr. Hall is actually in charge of this destiny. If it's going to be 1,000 feet or 500 feet, if he wants them in front of the structures or behind, that's the easement or the trench that he'll have to dig. So I'll dismiss Mr. Hall's number 17.
Other questions or comments? Hearing none, any action? I move to deny the Hall motion on 17. Motion has been made. What's that? Oh, you already made it. My apologies, Commissioner Kolbeck. I had a little bee in my ear buzzing around. Motion has been made. Any comments? With that, we'll proceed to vote. Hanson?
Aye.
Kolbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Sorry again.
It was one of my better moments, too.
Oh, I'm sure
you're
brilliant.
You missed it.
Hall 18.
Actually, Commissioner, I'd like to skip to Hall number 20. I think 18 and 19 have been previously answered today.
18 and 19 are withdrawn by Mr. Hall. Hall 20, proceed.
Number 20 goes back to the prudent investment. They use that in the law, and they use that in their tariff. They have not completed a assessment of the existing facilities. In their last testimony, Mr. Thompson said they only build out for known facilities, and they haven't looked at what is known and what is in order to see if it would be a prudent investment to service those people.
Mr. Thompson?
Again, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hall is trying to change the question midstream here. What he asked us to do was to speculate about the gross and net income we would receive by providing phone service to an unspecified number of additional home sites in the mobile home park and explain our calculations. Well, frankly, we have no idea whether the, first of all, the total number of trailers to be expected on Mr. Hall's property. I'm not certain he knows that. Number two, we have no way of predicting what individual subscribers might order, whether they would go with a basic, single, residential line with absolutely no vertical services attached, or whether they would elect to bundle Quest services, including our wireless partnership services and our satellite TV partnership services as well. So there's a wide range of potential products and services that individual tenants, an unspecified number of individual tenants, I'll remind the commission, might order in the future. So it's impossible to speculate about what our net and gross profits might be in the out years because we don't even know how many folks would live inside the park potentially and what they might potentially order.
Thank you, Ms. Semler.
Staff supports Quest's objection. The number of lots and the tenant's choice of phone providers is completely unknown, and they're not the type of records that Quest would keep.
Commissioner, may I make a statement about that?
Go ahead, Mr. Hall.
Yeah, yes. When you say you don't know what phone service they may select, I'll remind everybody that Hill City Quest is the only provider
I think the reference is more to what type of package.
I understand, but I just want to make sure that they're clear that there is no other alternative in Hill City other than Quest.
Sure.
Question. Well, Mr. Chairman, I would disagree with that. I mean, Verizon Wireless provides service in Hill City as well.
Okay. Any commissioner comments or questions? Mr. Islov.
Not a commissioner, but this is Greg Rislov. I have a question. Does your catalog specify that customer contribution is dependent upon revenues received from subscribers within or on the particular extension in a given development?
No, I don't believe it does.
So, you know, I'm really curious why this question popped up from Mr. Hall. If there's no requirement in the catalog that revenues in a particular extension have to be taken account of, if Mr. Hall could answer that question.
Yes, sir. I'm coming back to the prudent planning of the system and not specifically of a development. As I stated before, in this corner of town, Hill City is growing at a constant rate of 6% a year, which can be documented. And I'm going back to the general issue of supporting the infrastructure. So
just to make sure, there was no promise made by Quest on this basis, nor did you happen to read this particular did you happen to read about a particular funding mechanism within the catalog or tariff?
Not with Quest, no.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Smith?
Yeah, the only thing, and maybe it's, I'm not sure who to address this to, I guess, Mr. Thompson maybe, and you know, I note in one of your filings, I think it's your response, or it's maybe it's your motion for summary judgment, you include Section 4.2 General. And in that, you do state that one of the factors you look at in terms of your prudency determination is the extent or substantial extra cost or risk. And the second one is facilities are ordered in advance of actual customer demand for service. And I guess maybe, and I'm going back maybe to 13, and I think the commission already denied the motion with respect to that one, but to me at least, some, you know, all businesses do things to some extent with, you know, with some assumptions about what take rate might be, you know, and to me at least, looking at what the existing take rate is for existing mobile homes and what Quest might think about what its assumptions are about future take rates in a particular area wouldn't seem to me to be a ridiculous thing to think about in this case. I don't know. Maybe if you could maybe address that. Because I do see 4.2 does seem to explicitly look at the issue of prudency of investment in terms of calculating to the extent to which a line extension involves customer contribution. And it does state one of the factors you look at is what I'd call the take rate and the timing of that.
Mr. Smith, I agree that philosophically, that's certainly in the catalog, and you know, there may be folks who are interested generally in that question, including you and the commissioners, but that's not the question that Mr. Hall asked. You know, he asked us to identify gross and net income, not a forecast, and he asked us to do that based on an unspecified number of additional home sites in this question. So as phrased, and frankly, that's the only thing Quest has to go on until Mr. Hall expands upon, revises, changes, or explains his questions, it's impossible to speculate on the broad question that he asked. You know, we can all certainly speculate on what Mr. Hall meant. And if he had focused his question more precisely or wants to at some point direct another question to Quest, we'll certainly consider whether or not we have records that would address that particular question. But to the extent that we're addressing the question asked in number 20, I don't see how Quest would have records that would identify the gross and net income of an unspecified number of additional home sites in his mobile home park.
Mr. Commissioner, this is Roger Hall again.
Go ahead, Mr. Hall.
I think if everybody conducted business in this manner, just as a little side note, there would never be a new business ever started in the world. You know, that's my comment to that. If you're always banking on what's there instead of what's to come, you would never expand your business. You would never start a new business. So, thank you.
Well, and thanks for the comment. I mean, that's probably a little bit more, you know, aligned with, you know, argument as opposed to dealing with question, you know, 20. But I understand where you're coming from. Other commissioner advisor questions or comments? Mr. Islov?
I would like to respond. This is Greg Rislov again. As we normally deal with these types of questions that relate to specific policies on customer contributions, and while I can understand what Mr. Hall is getting at, absent that type of language in the catalog or tariff or within an agreement, I'm not an attorney, but if it's arguable on where the company should go, I think that argument is made at hearing. I don't see this as part of, you know, our normal customer contribution type proceedings, so therefore I think it would be impossible to answer this question. It would be impossible for me as a staff analyst to answer this question without some sort of boundaries or without some rules upon which to base the answer. And you know, again, I understand where Mr. Hall is going, but I think it's an impossibility to answer this question is what I'm trying to say within the context of which I would relate this question as a staff member.
Commissioner Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Besides being rather impractical to answer, impossible to answer, they certainly could give some estimate. However, it would seem more in the sense of rate making than a situation where Mr. Hall actually has to know this information in order to ascertain whether or not he wants to place the infrastructure on his facilities. It seems more of a decision as to whether or not Quest would want to provide the service.
Any other comments? And I'll pause for just a moment.
Mr. Thompson, I'll ask you a question. We're just taking a moment. But does Quest bury the exact same cable up to every single location they bury up to?
No, Mr. Commissioner. And we engineer each job individually. And you know, I'm sure Dan Kaiser would have a lot more information on that. But I can tell you generally that the answer to your question is no.
Okay. Thank you.
Any action on 20?
Mr. Chairman, I move to deny Hall request 20 for information.
Okay. Motion has been made. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. The motion carries 3-0. Mr. Hall, number 21.
Well, number 21, I just threw that in there because it seemed like a reasonable thing to ask to see who the other people and what opinions they'd be providing for the upcoming hearing, and possibly disclose information that could be relevant to the hearing.
Mr. Thompson?
Mr. Chairman, we know for a fact at this point that Mr. Kaiser will be testifying. We are working on whether or not we will call more than one witness. Haven't decided that yet, but as soon as that's decided internally, we'll certainly notify both staff and Mr. Hall.
Do you have an estimated time frame?
I think we should wrap that up within the next 2 weeks, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Ms. Semler?
I certainly don't object to Quest's offer to supplement this question. It seems only fair that all parties go ahead and provide that information so we know what to expect at the hearing.
I don't have a procedural schedule in front of me, Ms. Semler. Was there a date set for that?
The hearing, yes, has been set for May 5th.
Either pre-filing a testimony or sort of the announcement of what witnesses would be called?
Sure. I believe the commission has opted not to do a pre-filed testimony requirement, but I am happy to coordinate an exchange of information amongst the parties as to who we can expect as witnesses. And I can get that done here in the next couple weeks.
And I do think that's typical, isn't it, to have an exchange of witness? Okay, Mr. Smith?
Well, yeah, usually, and you know, when lawyers are involved, they usually request that information. But I guess, Mr. Thompson, and would it be appropriate for the commission to grant his motion with respect to this item with the understanding that you can only provide witness names you're currently aware of, but that you would update that information as additional witness in good faith as additional witness identities and what they're going to talk about become known?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Smith, that's absolutely right. We're certainly not going to hide the ball, and we're prepared to file pre-filed testimony if that was the commission's desire, since we found out within the last 2 or 3 days that the commission's desire is just to proceed with live testimony. We'll certainly identify the witness, and we'll work with Ms. Semler to get those names set in stone here in the next 2 weeks.
Thanks. Any commissioner questions or comments? We'll go to action, and I would move that the commission approve the motion to compel on item 21 with the understanding that Mr. Hall and staff would respond likewise, and that we'll look to Ms. Semler to coordinate that transfer of information if necessary. Motion's been made. Any discussion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hanson?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Mr. Hall, number 22.
Well, actually, I'd like to, in the essence of time, lump 22, 23, and 24 together. They all address the Lifeline service and Lifeline link-up. As the owner of the mobile home park, as has been stated before, I'm sure that I do have people in there that are subscribers to this and therefore requires, you know, Quest to fulfill their obligation to these people. And I know that I do have someone moving into a trailer now that will be a subscriber to this.
I understand your interest in taking them all together, but I feel like 24 is rather different. So unless you object, Mr. Okay. Hall, we'll take 22 and 23 together. Mr. Thompson?
Can I speak real quick, Mr. Thompson? I just feel that 22 and 23 have been answered adequately.
Okay, so you withdraw 22 and 23.
Yes, sir.
We'll focus on 24. And, Mr. Hall, if you want to reiterate any comments you made, go ahead.
Just at this point, I was looking for the customers in the park that who are Lifeline and Lifelink services or who have requested it. I do believe that there are people in there that are eligible and may or may not have requested it.
Okay, Mr. Thompson?
Mr. Sherman, the question asked us to violate CPNI rules. Essentially, by identifying customers in Mr. Hall. Frankly, I don't think we'd have any information on folks who might be eligible but have not requested Lifeline service or link-up assistance. And the company wouldn't have any records until the individual approaches the company and either signs up for service under those programs or is denied service because they don't qualify for those programs. Frankly, I'm not sure how this information is relevant to the complaint Mr. Hall has brought. Mr. Hall's complaint essentially focuses on the fact that he doesn't want to pay for construction facilities into his mobile home park. The complaint doesn't focus on whether or not Quest is serving or could serve or has served Lifeline and LinkUp customers.
Ms. Semler?
Staff recommends denying Mr. Hall's request on number 24. It's irrelevant information to the issue at hand, and the question asks for Quest to provide very personal and private information that they may or may not even have.
Commissioner, advisor comments or questions? Commissioner Colbeck.
Yes, I think Mr. Hall, there are tens of thousands of dollars every year spent on Lifeline and LinkUp programs, hopefully getting that word out. If you have anybody that you suspect should be on Lifeline and LinkUp, have them call our office at the PUC, and Deb Gregg can definitely take care of those people. We've actually had a flood of calls recently because of the advertisements that have gone out. But according to this procedure in this this docket, I don't think that someone's name, address, and their income is definitely not pertinent to the situation. CPNI rules and statutes are very strict, so I'll motion to deny Mr. Hall's request number 24.
Motion has been made. Comments on the motion? Question to Commissioner Colbeck. Commissioner Colbeck, would you be amenable to a substitute motion to deny in part and approve in part? I mean, I wonder if the numbers, I mean, I agree, this is sort of, I'm not quite sure I understand fully where Mr. Hall is going here, and I don't know if it's likely to lead to admissible evidence, but just the numbers rather than the identities of those people on Lifeline or LinkUp might get Mr. Hall the information that he seeks in any case.
Sure. I guess I'd have to ask legal staff. It asks who, and then I don't think that we should reveal their identities or who has requested Lifeline service. I just am very timid about getting into that, any of that. I would say no, I wouldn't put a...
Well, and the deny in part would be to deny his request for customer-specific information.
The other reason I would kind of be against that is we're only talking about maybe 15 trailers. If they come up with a number of 10, it's kind of, it might be pretty easy to figure out who it is. So I don't want to give him any evidence or prejudice our commission in any or quest in any way to get these numbers out. If we were talking about tens of thousands and he wanted a number like 100, I'd probably have less of a problem with that, but since we're talking about 15 and we could be talking about a number of 10, that kind of limits your options and makes me a little more leery of that.
Okay. Any other comments on the pending Colbeck motion? I do feel like we could probably ask Quest to reveal some numbers, if not identities, so I'll be voting against the motion, and if it fails, I don't want to get on top of your motion, so I'll let us resolve yours, and then if it's unresolved, then I'll make another motion. Further comments? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote on the Colbeck motion to deny. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johns votes no. Motion carries 2-1. Mr. Hall, I believe that completes your discovery requests.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Well, I will say I just wanted to address, thank you for your time, and Dusty, I did only bat 2 out of 24, just in case you're keeping track of my batting score. But Commissioner Colbeck, specifically, you talk about Lifeline information. I have actually gone door-to-door and handed out Lifeline information to my newer tenants that are just moving in.
That sounds great. Thank you.
Commissioner Hansen?
Mr. Chairman, I just don't want to be lost on the we ruled on item 1, I believe, that it would not be we did not rule in favor of it. And I'm wondering if the map is a part of that, but I want to be assured that we're going to have a better map if we're going to get into the docket. I appreciate Commissioner Colbeck's statement. It is difficult to follow this, and I'm sure it's a copy of a copy of a copy that's been sent through the, maybe it's been faxed even, I don't know, but it's a little bit challenging to follow.
Well, I just thought if we can find a quarter on a street using Google Earth, we could maybe get a little bit of a map, better map to go by.
If, you know, this suggestion would prejudice anyone or would be out of order, please someone let me know. But could we, although we're not doing pre-filed testimony, would it be possible to have the parties pre-file maps that they intend to use during the hearing?
That's a great idea.
Staff does not object.
Mr. Thompson, Mr. Hall,
No, I do not object to that. I think I submitted one with my original complaint, but I don't see it here. I think there was one on my original complaint, sir.
Yeah, I did see those, and if any, I just want to make sure that if people are going to use a better map during the hearing that we've got. I mean, I for one, a day or two or a week before the hearing, and like kind of take a look at it and see if I get a better understanding. Mr. Thompson, any objection?
Mr. Chairman, I just don't know whether there are better or, frankly, other maps, but we'll certainly check and respond to the commission if that's your order.
I would move. I'm sorry, Commissioner Colbeck, go ahead.
I just wanted to state, Mr. Thompson, that not necessarily. You know, it doesn't need to be a satellite map or anything like that. Even a representation of a map that's drawn out, maybe just a little more precisely or a little more clearly, rather than a copy of what we have existing.
Mr. Commissioner, we'll be happy to check on that. I just can't tell you definitively one way or the other right now without checking with our engineering folks.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps it'd be beneficial for Mr. Thompson to realize we're looking at the map that you are probably looking at. We're looking at is the same map. It's just that ours is about one half a sheet size, and it's been copied and sent. And you are perhaps looking at the same map, and the same map might do very well for us. It's just that ours is has lost some of its images.
I understand, Commissioner Hansen, and we'll be happy to have at least a full page size version of this map provided to the commission, and we'll consider whether or not we can get an even bigger version so that everyone can refer to it and, if need be, a trial.
My motion would be to require the parties 3 days prior to the start of hearing to pre-file any maps that they intend to use during the hearing. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Yes.
Colbeck?
Yes.
Johnson votes yes. Motion carries 3-0. Good suggestion, Gary and Steve. Other business to come before the commission? I would draw your attention to announcements that are located at the bottom of our agenda, as always. And unless there's any further business to come before the commission, we will stand adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.